Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Guy, baby, we've done it.
Yeah, man.
That's all the Emmanuels we're going to watch. We just watched the first one again to bookend it.
I feel so good. Pretty dedicated from us to go back for a little bit more medicine. I guess not entirely out of keeping with previous seasons, but it was a beautiful and intriguing bookend to the season, and also it almost risks, in my eyes, elevating the entire experience into something beyond a huge and infuriating waste of time and, dare I say, becomes art?
Oh, no. Are we jeopardizing the core tenet of this podcast that it is a huge waste of everybody's time, mostly our own?
I'm afraid we might be. Nothing will reclaim the hours I spent not masturbating or enjoying myself while I watch these pornos.
That's true, but to be fair, you also didn't masturbate while watching the other films, Grown Ups 2, Sex and the City 2, Sex and the City 1, and Are Your Friends.
That's not really for you to say, Tim.
I was with you for, I would say, three quarters of the watches.
That's right, and even on some of those watches, you'd nip off to the bathroom.
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera. But
No, let's not brush past it.
I'd masturbate in your bathroom breaks, yes.
To completion?
Always.
It frustrates me that you wouldn't excuse yourself to the bathroom and masturbate in there, rather wait for
monster.
Me to go.
I'm not grotesque.
Well, you kind of are, because that means you're masturbating in, my lounge?
Yes.
Which seems infinitely more ghastly.
Oh, come on, Tim. It's either that, and I do it in secret and tell you later, or I look like I'm taking a lot of bathroom breaks. I'm not going to embarrass myself like that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But in doing this, returning to the 1974 feature film directed by Just Jackin that started this entire journey, we've traveled through time, genre. We've sort of watched the various different mutations.
Do you know what we've traveled through more than anything, though? Production values.
Yeah.
There wasn't a visible green screen here that hadn't been keyed in. I didn't see any light stands. There weren't people who were like visibly forgetting their lines and just sort of making something up on the fly.
Well, this is exactly the thing I'm sort of getting at. It's like, it's incredible what a movie this was.
Oh, yeah.
And it's incredible to see, you know, through all the permutations, it's incredible to see. If you take out all of the stuffing, all the connective tissue from the middle, and you just think of Emmanuel's chocolate factory versus Emmanuel 1974,
yeah.
What is there to tell you or anyone that these properties are linked?
I've got my hand in the air, Mr. Montgomery.
Please, Tim, go ahead.
The name Emmanuel.
That's right. Undeniable.
Two M's, two L's. That is it. That's literally it. Well, and the loose concept of, I guess, being naked in a movie.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah. I mean, the nudity, you take the nudity as read, but it's just
and
like...
It, What's interesting as well and kind of satisfying is that it is a pretty linear decline across the years. So, like, this is, without question, the high watermark. And then the George Lazenby ones on a plane recounting with the different people, those are, like, a lot worse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we enjoyed Emmanuel in Space, but I think for kind of different reasons. It was one of those things where it was like, this is funny, but you're not trying to be funny. You just, you know.
But I no, those, honestly, those were like a turning point for the series and almost at an inflection point where it stopped being like, those were fun.
Yeah.
And those were actually, I would say, almost what the prompt was for the season, which is those are the movies we sort of remembered watching. And they were a great blend of like sort of self-referential comedic tones, still some eroticism, and like a semblance of a plot. Like it was far-fetched, but every movie kind of made sense unto itself. And it sort of began to unravel after that. And those made sense to me to an extent. It's just like, I find it really satisfying that we've bookended the series with this film. And like, it's interesting to consider all of the ones that we've collected along the way.
Yes.
Much
like Mario, we are collectors, but we collect experiences.
That's right. And I'm just trying to get up the film series.
You are trying to get it up, aren't you? Very fitting. I would describe this movie, if it weren't for, there's like two scenes which I think showcase the fact that this is a French film made in 1974 that really pushed the boundaries. Were it not for those two quite dicey scenes, I would like highly recommend anyone to watch this as just like a really good movie.
Yeah.
You know?
I've got them here now. I'm inclined to agree. Like, it is, it's also,
there's something so Guy Montgomery about the start as well. When I first put it on, there's something about her in her little French kitchen preparing her toast with her sliced apple and her tea with the water that's boiling in a pot on the stove, and then transferring it over to the tray and then walking over to the white leather couches to this kind of luxuriate in the sitting room with these lush green house plants everywhere. It felt very Guy Montgomery to me. Like, this was sort of you and your ultimate form, I think, is Emmanuel. And then and then to sit down and look through very tasteful nude photography of yourself, I was like, I can see in the best version of how things pan out for Guy, this is it. This is a version of it.
There's no denying to him that is high praise and aspirational stuff. It's like, it's just, it's very tasteful and it's adult, not just in its in the fact that it's a softcore, like a skin flick, but also like the themes, I guess, or there's no real story dropped in. There's no sci-fi element. There's no like really intense movie.
there's no sexual energy generator that propels the crew through a wormhole on a blimp in this one.
Emmanuel, this sort of woman who's interested in sex and sexuality and exploring that within herself, travels to Thailand to stay at the embassy with her husband, who's sort of...
I think she's in Bangkok, though.
Bangkok is in Thailand.
Oh, my bad. That's right. I've been there.
And they have this sort of open... Is it an open marriage?
Well, it is. This is the beautiful thing. So what you find out about Emmanuel is that she was a virgin until she met her husband. Her husband's a little bit older than her. The dude reads as like the most suave 45-year-old Frenchman you've ever seen. And then he drops the line that he's 32 and you're like, oh, fucking hell.
I found it incredibly confronting to be older than that guy.
Yeah, which we definitely mentioned in the first go round of this as well. And how could you not? It really resonates how badly you're doing in life when you see this motherfucker traipsing around in his, I think it's an E-type jet or something, around the streets of Thailand. But he's got this young, so he, it seemed very kind of like aristocratic that it was friends of parents brought together at a house party in France, and then he sort of caught her eye, and then he deflowered her, as they put it, in his in his car a couple of weeks later, and they got married. And then, so it's like she's been, she is sort of presented as this, she's a young adult, but in a very childlike way. In the first bit of the movie, she's always wearing like pristine white dresses. She's very delicate. She's very, there's all these scenes and situations where she's scared all the time in the first half of the movie. Like they go to a marketplace and he goes out to buy like, yeah, I don't know, some food or something. And she gets overwhelmed by all the kids trying to sell her flowers and someone draining the blood out of a chicken. Sort of,
yeah,
and,
yeah. She seems like she may have been coddled in her beautiful French, yeah, sunroom.
And she even gets freaked out by like the bitches at the pool, you know,
yeah,
the pool,
yeah,
bitches.
But like
the wives of the other Europeans.
The actual plot is, it's all just, there's no real story beats. It's all just like I'm trying to learn about myself and I'm trying to figure out who I want to fuck and how I want to fuck them.
I wouldn't say that though. I reckon they're right. I just think that the plot is about her. It's like, so it's not about. This isn't the Avengers, you know what I mean? Mm. This isn't about like external forces driving a story through. It's about this development of this woman and her kind of suspecting at the start of the film that there's more to life and then sort of pursue. It's like the Matrix, man. She's like, man, there's something else out there. And she's sort of been searching for it in the same way that Neo is sort of looking for Morpheus, but isn't quite sure even what he's looking for. So I guess in this analogy, Morpheus is ultimately Mario, who's like this 70-year-old, impeccably dressed, I don't know what he does for a job, but
European,
I guess he's another ambassador.
Sex guru who lives in Thailand, and all of the women get funneled to Mario to learn about, yeah, how to fuck good.
He's described, I think, as a scientist of eroticism.
Yeah, he like definitely would not get vaccinated.
No, no, he would consider it a full on affront to his personhood.
Yeah, and he, yeah, like, but all of that is, all of it is, it's still conceptual. Like, it's all about personal development, whereas. And it's interesting as well. It's all about Emmanuel. And then as the franchise goes on through the years, all of a sudden they feel like they either run out of ideas or puff to actually concentrate the stories around Emmanuel and her exploration of sexuality. And they just use her as an access point to, like, you know, to explore the sexuality of everyone around her. And she's a facilitator of other people.
I think trying to reinvent the wheel 46 times by, yeah, re-exploring like a specific character's sexuality and mores and opening up would be an exercise in futility. Although a really intense creative problem to try and solve every movie.
Well, can I ask you, what do you think Just Jacqueline and Sylvia Christel would make of, say, the Emmanuel Through Time series, where Emmanuel's gotten to, where she's on this, you know, double dildo blimp with a sex generator and her own Emmanuel.tv station or website?
Honestly, I think I'm glad that she wasn't alive to see it. I'm pretty sure she died before that series started. But she was alive for Emmanuel in Space, I'm pretty sure, because that was like really late 90s, maybe early 2000s, mid-2000s. I think she'd be horrified. I kind of got the feeling that Sylvia Christel, I mean, because we did an episode where we did a little digging, and she, I think, wrote a memoir, and she said that it kind of ruined certain aspects of her life. So I don't think she was totally attached and enamored with the creative property and franchise of Emmanuel. So I think she probably wasn't that connected. But to compare like this movie with 95% of all the other ones we've seen is like so fucked.
Yeah. It's really
this is a really good movie. Like I enjoyed watching it.
It's just beautiful and tasteful.
It is, and the writing is incredible as well. Like I wrote down a bunch of these lines. Oh, this one just cracked me up. Is it true you never cheated on your husband? I said I never cheated on him in Paris.
Yeah,
that was good
because she did cheat on him twice on an airplane.
Like, yeah, this is Emmanuel, sorry, so everyone's caught up who hasn't seen the movie for the second time recently. Who's she talking to at that point? It's one of the pool bitches.
Is she talking to the young woman? Or is she just
the lollipop one?
Yeah. That plane scene, by the way, so it's told in flashback, but basically Emmanuel's husband kind of gets to have sex with who he wants while he's at the embassy in Thailand, and there's an implied openness to the relationship where he's like, and you get to do it, you want to, and that applies all the way up until she actually starts doing that, and then he's like, oh, I don't know about all this.
Yeah.
But the plane ride over, she's sitting there and there's a guy she likes to look of and he likes to look of her, and they sort of, it's actually quite an erotic scene, and they start having sex on the plane, maybe under a blanket, I can't remember, not really under a blanket, just together.
No, she gets a blanket so she can reveal her thigh to him.
And they're sort of like, they're going at it, and that's in and of itself, in a porno, it's a functional scene, but then there's this guy in the background of shot who sees what's happening, and we see him seeing what's happening, and then there's this like incredibly... What I would say has probably now been reappropriated as like a comedy zoom, like this incredible crash zoom in on his face when he sees what's happening and wants a slice of the action. It's like a camera technique that's used a lot in Succession and sort of all of Armando Iannucci's shows and stuff.
Yeah,
now.
I feel like maybe Adam McKay uses this sort of thing as well. It's like a cool, I don't know. I can't even remember what movie is in my head right now, but like Brad Pitt's wearing glasses and he's in the bit. Oh, actually, I think it's Ocean's 11. So that's a
Steven Soderbergh.
Soderbergh film. But it's just kind of like, not enough zooms in movies today. Everyone got too scared of using them because I think some really good comedy movies grabbed hold of it and were like, hey, this is fucking fun. And everyone's too scared to use them.
I don't know if
Succession
it's a comedy
did
beat.
Bring them back.
I don't know if it's a comedy beat in the movie, but it's since it reads as such because of the time when we're watching this film. And I just love that zoom. Like, I loved that scene and I love that zoom so much. I was like, yeah, this guy is going to get it. And
so what happens next, Monty?
Well, once Emmanuel finishes with plane passenger one, the guy comes over and picks her up. The crash,
scoops her up in his arms.
And they walk to the bathroom and then they have sex there. And those are the two times she cheated on her husband.
It's a real TARDIS situation as well, because you see the door to that bathroom on the airplane, you're like, this doesn't look big enough to fit two people and a camera crew. But then suddenly we're inside it and it's a regular ass-sized bathroom.
That's right.
Luckily for us, because we need to watch two people have sex.
Wow, they're flying first class. You got to assume if you're part of the embassy, the French embassy, you're going to be flying first class.
Great use of magazines in this movie. There's a shot of I shouldn't call them pool bitches. That does definitely sound offensive now that I've said it for the seventh time. The woman by the pool,
harpies.
One of them is this young girl who's always sucking on a lollipop because it turns old men on by her own admission. And she comes around to Emmanuel's house to have a chat to her and then masturbate in front of her. Mm-hmm. And she's
really like forward and she's really horny for Emmanuel.
Yes, guy. Yeah, for someone who she's met once and then turns up at her house and is like, hey, how you doing? I'm just going to have a quick
She turns up at her house and Emmanuel's sleeping and she's like, okay, well, first of all, I want to check that out. And then Emmanuel doesn't take issue with it, and they go out. And then she's like, hey, Emmanuel, you got any photos of you and your husband doing it?
Yeah, that's right. Emmanuel's like, no.
And then she's like, okay, I'll just masturbate to this magazine then.
Yeah, and then there's this great shot of this like handsome, rich, clean-cut, polo shirt-wearing 45-year-old dude, and it's just resting on her knee, pointing at her crotch, and he's just got this big toothy smile like looking into her crotch while she masturbates.
Yeah.
It's a great shot.
So now
and then the other magazine use is when Jean, who's Emmanuel's husband, goes, so there's this one of the other pool woman is this older woman who is just relentlessly hitting on Emmanuel the entire movie. And when Emmanuel finally takes up Jean's offer to like go and be a free spirit, she falls in love with an archaeologist called B.
Mm-hmm.
And they fuck off and go horseback riding and fuck in the wilderness. It's great.
Awesome.
Jean loses his goddamn mind and starts door knocking to go and find out where she's gone. Goes to the older woman's house to find out Emmanuel's whereabouts. And there's a, they end up fucking, by the way, Jean and the older woman.
How could you?
And there's a there's a magazine open on the table while he's just absolutely railing her. That's just open with a page saying "Help is on its way," just like pointed completely at the camera. It's like, there's such a cool, I don't know, just these little things that you forget you're allowed to do in movies, like zoom in on someone or just really explicitly have these funny kind of, you know, visual gags just, by opening magazine pages up.
It's just such a soft and tasteful touch is all through this movie compared to the sort of like green screen hammer that is taken to us in the franchise as time marches on. It's really... And so I'm interested. I'd love like to analyze the sex scenes through the years with you, Tim. These are all sort of like, I suppose a lot of the eroticism in these scenes is rooted in the established attraction of the characters to each other. Whereas, yeah, like as the franchise continues into the almost present day and porn in general, all of them, it's like, we know you don't care about how these people know each other, but they're both attractive, and we will make them have sex for you.
I would venture to say that much like real life, the secret is you have a bit of foreplay in there.
Mm.
You know, you got to set some stuff up. You've got to have context. Light a few candles. Put some Barry White on. You know, set the tone. And this movie does a great job of, just by virtue of being a well-made film, setting the tone. And like, the writing is so good. Like, I wrote down a bunch of the lines.
Why don't you share some of your favorites with us, Tim?
It was so refreshing coming from these other movies to be like, oh, this is cinema. Okay, so here's one. So Emmanuel, when she's crying to Jean, so she's gone out and had this tryst with B, and B, they've made love, but then B's like, I don't love you. I'm not in love with you. Yeah. And Emmanuel is very in love with B. And B is leaving the next day as well to go back
home. How do you feel about the way B handles herself and all that?
I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's quite hurtful. Like, it's not, you know, it's not very good for Emmanuel, like, but
I feel like she's up front. She's honest.
Yeah. Yeah, she is. She sort of spurs Emmanuel a few times.
Yeah.
And then she's like, you want to jump in the Jeep? Fucking come whatever. Go for it. Come check out my gravel pit. Check out my gravel pit. Because she's an archaeologist.
Yeah.
And then so she says, Emmanuel then returns home and Jean finds her eventually just crying in a puddle. And he says, it's much better this way. So she says that I can't play the game of being an adult. Like, it's just, it's beyond her capabilities. And Jean says, it's much better this way. It would only hurt you. Traditional couples only experience power struggles. Passionate love is not for us. It's too sad and humiliating. Forget this woman. You must go and get revenge in the arms of someone else. It's the only answer.
Pretty, you know, after Jean's behavior when Emmanuel doesn't come home one night, you got to hand it to him. Pretty open-minded response to the situation at hand.
He freaked out because I think he was threatened that maybe she was in the arms of another fella. But then when he found out that it was a woman, he's like, you got to get back on that horse, find another Sheila.
Yeah. Men are so funny like that, aren't they? A woman could never be more attracted to a woman than me, a man.
Here's another great line, Guy. I think this is the older woman saying it to Emmanuel when she gets very like frustrated at Emmanuel's constant kind of titillation but not going through with stuff and just being annoying. And she says, you're going through life like a baby waiting for her first cold.
Yeah.
That's great.
You like that?
Yeah, I did.
Do you feel that's applicable in your own life?
No, I don't think so. But I know people who that applies to, you know, people who are just waiting for something bad to happen so they can be like, oh God, and now this other thing.
Yeah.
It's like, well, yeah, if you're fucking waiting for the bad thing to happen, it probably will.
I love that. It's sort of, it's also, there's a touch of Hamlet about it, isn't there?
Yeah.
Hamlet was plagued by indecision, and then life makes decisions for you. You've got to be an active participant in your own life. I mean, the lessons we're taking away from this movie are honestly inspiring.
It's great. There's a lot to get out of it. Oh, okay. No, this I think hands down is my favorite and really speaks to, you know, if I can return to seventh form English, the themes of this movie.
Shit, yeah, dude.
So this is when it is suggested to Emmanuelle that she needs to go and hang out with fuckboy Mario.
Fuckboy, it's your number one fuckboy.
Fuckmaster Mario.
Grandmaster, and, fuck.
She's not taking it as seriously as she needs to. And so the older woman, when they're in the changing room of the squash court, and she's like, you need to go hang out with Mario. She's like, I don't know. What even is, you know, the deal with this Mario? I can't remember what Emmanuelle says, but she's disparaging about it. And then the older woman grabs her by her chin so she'll pay attention. And she says, when you are young, you make love naturally. But at Mario's age, it's poetry. It's something you want, something you think of and decide. That is eroticism.
I actually really liked that quote as well.
It's fucking good.
It's really good.
I mean, he does end up taking her to an opium den. But, you know, the idea and the flowery language is very enjoyable.
Mario's into some pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah. They go on a date, and there's three locations in the date. And as anyone who listens to good serial killer podcasts know, never follow the person to the second location. Because the first one is dinner, which is great. But then the second one is an opium den. And the third one is a Thai boxing cockfight.
Yeah. And that, but that's like, to both Mario and Emmanuel's credit, that's when she like has a breakthrough. He's like, there are two people here. The winner will have sex with you. And she's like, okay. And he's like, which one do you like? She's like, I like that guy. And then he wins, presumably spurred on a little bit by her desire. And she's so overwhelmed that he wins that she starts like, does she lick the blood off his?
She sure does.
Yeah.
He's got an open cut on the side of his head. And she gives that little lick.
It's kind of gross, but I guess kind of horny.
In context, I think that's about the 80th minute of a 90-minute film. I think they've earned it by that stage. They've done enough work.
What do you think about the line, Tim? I wrote it down, which was Mario's advice during the date, and it becomes a bit of a refrain. And it is almost a central question that's asked in this film. The couple should be outlawed and a third person introduced by force. I mean, so it's initially it's a line, but then later on it's repeated like ad infinitum. What do you make of that?
I think like there, I would be willing to listen to an argument about the first bit.
Yeah.
of the prospect of the couple should be outlawed. It's like, okay, I get that some people think that monogamy is not something that humans
it's not natural
supposed to sort of engage in, or it's limiting or something like that. But for a third person to be introduced by force,
it does,
doesn't sound too tenable to me.
It does feel like two separate arguments that he's sort of like, he's just put the trailer on the first one where he's like, okay, here's one thing about couples. And you go, okay. And then while he has your ear, he's like, and also, don't you reckon a third person should be forced in there?
Roast chicken is awesome, and so is slavery. It's like, hold on. Yeah, you can't run those two things
can't
together.
Lure me in with roast chicken and then make me party to your, I don't know, your outrage.
Your terrible ideas.
I that's what I mean when I think this is an adult movie. It deals with adult themes. I don't think it's perfect, but like, it's, If we're not in sex scenes, we're sort of in between the build-up to sex scenes, and the stuff that they're talking about is all about like the character's relationship to sexuality and how they relate to each other. And it's kind of, I guess it's just a refresher on where the franchise started, and it's also like a palate cleanser after having consumed the entirety of the franchise to be like, you know, this is where we started. It was not high tech, low spec, you know, fuck blimps. It was just a bunch of French people in Thailand running around having sex with each other and seeing how it made them feel.
Yeah.
And there's something, I guess, beautifully simple about that.
What do you make, Guy, of the journey we've taken through Emmanuelle is a sort of allegory to the journey cinema has made over a similar epoch from 1974 to now, where it's like the movies used to be about something and now it's the eighth Spider-Man reboot
with
a dude.
I, I suppose you can overlay, you know, cinema to the Emmanuel franchise, but it's like the movies used to be about something, and then now I guess the movies are about making sure people want to watch the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good description.
Like all the movie, like so many of the movies that come out now, I just feel like the creation process behind them is very cynical. And it's like, if we put X, Y, and Z together, that means this many people will want to watch it. Whereas this movie was like, if we film a bunch of French people in Thailand having sex with each other and seeing how that makes them feel, that might be pretty interesting. And it's not going to be for everyone, but the people who it is for are going to really connect to it.
I think it'd be foolish for us to overlook the fact that good movies do still exist. But I think they're in a completely different – they're way less accessible than they used to be. And when I say good, you know, fucking don't at me, you dicks. You know what I'm talking about.
At him. He's dying to be atted. Anyone who says don't at me is absolutely begging for an atting. I also feel like to probably blow a little bit too much smoke up the journey of the arsehole we've been on –
it's like, no, it's fun to imbue our nonsense with meaning.
Marvel represents like modern cinema for better or worse. And it feels like, just from what I see online, that even the Marvel Cinematic Universe is at an inflection point where maybe it's just the echo chambers I haunt, but people are like, okay, I'm ready for something different now. Does that fit?
They've had a real... if you're speaking, I mean, purely like... I mean, financially, certainly, but just the bulk of eyeballs over the past 15 years, they've had a total stranglehold over movie theaters. And it has literally been to the detriment of any other kinds of films, like coming out in the same way, like coming out for a mainstream cinema release, like a wide cinema release. So now everything has to, and to compete with that, now you've got to be like James Bond or a James Bourne film or a Jason Bourne film or some big established character that studios are not afraid to bank on just facing off against each other. Like, it is fucking
everything
boring.
Everything is funny now and it's exhausting.
Yeah.
It's like everything, you know, Marvel movies are as much comedy as they are just action or entertainment films. And I'm like, but they're not actually funny. They just acknowledge comedic beats exist and write them into their movies?
Maybe this is our turning point where we turn into Rialto goers, where we are the Pinot Noir sipping 60-year-old woman that we see in the lobby of when we're lining up for independent film. Yeah, when we go to Cats, exactly.
Maybe we don't go to Cats anymore. Maybe.
Who we're seeing some like touching Colin Firth, you know, coming of old age story. That's going to be us now. And we're going to be trying to convince all these people under the age of 40 to go to movies with...
I'm not afraid of it.
I don't even know who these old actors are, but they're always British. I'll tell you that for free.
I even think about it in the context of like the journey that our Patreon Deciders Club have sent us on and the movies we've watched. Like if you trace it back, the most interesting ones have been like Zardos.
Yeah.
And all these movies from, like, I guess the 70s through the 80s that were just so fucking off the wall.
Yeah.
That it's harder to come by in the Holy Mountain is the other one I was trying to think of.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Holy Mountain, Zardos. I feel like there was another, like, semi-recent, totally batshit insane one as well in the mix that was a similar era. But they were all so good and so fun.
Yeah.
Zardos, man. Sean Connery in a codpiece fighting aliens.
It's also interesting to think now, like, so this movie came out in 1974. We've since traipsed through all of the Emmanuel franchise, and we did Carry On Emmanuel recently. That was a movie that came out in 1978. So I think maybe there'd been two Emmanuel films, but that was largely like a response to this. So I guess just connecting those dots makes a little bit more sense to me because we watched Carry On Emmanuel after we'd seen all of Emmanuel and it was like, what is this?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it does. It doesn't change the fact that it was terrible.
Yeah, awful. Yeah.
Hey, was Carry On the Marvel Cinematic Universe of its day?
No, but it was a scary movie. It paid, like, there was a before Marvel, because Marvel, like, Marvel also kind of hoovered up the, they became self-referential parodying. I feel like they kind of hoovered up, like, I mean, there was not another franchise.
Yes.
That was everywhere for a while.
Is it the Wayans? Did they make them?
They did Scary did they Movie, which was like parallel to, but I don't think they did all the Not Another's.
Yeah, fuck you, Marvel. You don't get to be the big, huge juggernaut and be self-referential. Like,
the thing is,
go fuck yourself.
I guess they
You can't just wrap your, I don't know, your big bank balance in Kevlar.
Did you ever watch that new Space Jam movie?
No, I didn't. I heard it was terrible. I was quite excited to see it, but then which is bad. I shouldn't listen to reviews because I frequently see movies that are poorly reviewed and fucking love them.
But that wasn't just reviewers. That was everyone.
No, that's right. That's a good point. Yeah, and everyone said it was like a shitty cash grab.
Yeah, yeah. Or it was just like it was a
with an over-sexualized CGI bunny.
No. Desexualized CGI bunny. Everyone was getting pissed off because they made Lola Rabbit's tits smaller. No, that was like they played the highlights reel of the Warner Brothers intellectual property. What was that movie about? It was like, look at all these characters we own.
Do you remember Porky Pig? No. Oh, fuck. Do you remember LeBron James? Yeah. Okay.
He's still going, isn't he? Yeah, I mean, it's been a lot of work this season. It's been, I'm not going to lie, a slog. And I know that we've still got a James Bond film to watch as like a button, but it's very satisfying to have it in the rearview mirror. And it is like, I think revisiting this does contextualize it and add, I mean, and I'm probably retrofitting this, but it does add value to think about, you know, a study of, to an extent, a study of porn and of cinema and of like one intellectual property and the way you can stretch it across decades.
Can I say this as well, Guy? Imagine, if you will, shut your eyes for a minute and take yourself back to when we started this, which I think was actually over a year ago. And instead of embarking on a whole season of watching the Emmanuel movies where it does change every week, but it's in a franchise, imagine if we had done, now I want you to remember every lockdown that we've had. Imagine if we had just done one movie like normal across this whole span. I think we would be in a very seriously bad way.
Yeah.
We always toy with some maximum fucked up ideas. Like, what if we just did another year of Sex and the City 2? Can you imagine if we had pulled the trigger on doing that for the last year that we've experienced?
It's, I mean,
I might be dead.
Yeah, that's a difficult question because obviously the person in me knows we've made the right decision and that would be genuinely ruinous. The comedian in me is like, that's a pretty good bit.
I think it would have been too much, truly. I don't think it would have been a funny listen. Particularly like the last 3 months, I think would have been, I don't think we would have been very talkative, and I think it would have been very dark.
Yeah. And you know what? Like, there is, I think, you're right. It would have been too dark because amongst, like, you know, as weird as it is, this podcast is escapism for our one libertarian listener, and so I think to only represent, like, inside of already a challenging year, to represent the worst of ourselves and bring out the worst in each other would be a harrowing hole to peer down.
Yeah.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig.
Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now, earlier you remembered the line, the couple should be outlawed and a third person should be introduced by force. I can hear someone absolutely knocking on the door in a way where it feels like it's going to break off the hinges.
Hello.
Hi, Boner Inspector. How are you doing?
I thought I was George.
Yeah, actually, I think you might be. Sorry, George Lazenby. I beg your pardon. We've got two frequent visitors.
I know
yourself and the Boner Inspector, and you've never met.
I understand.
You're similar statures, and sometimes I don't have my wits
about me. You know, we've got similar voices, I guess.
Yeah, I never really thought about that before, but you do kind of have similar voices.
Incredibly hard to distinguish.
Yeah.
And
how are you, world's greatest listener?
Oh, I've been pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah, man. Just been learning how to stand up paddleboard.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
That's a fun new skill to learn at age, I want to say 87 or so.
Oh, come on, Tim. You know, I'm not 87.
No, that's right. I know for sure that you are 82 years old and celebrated your most recent birthday on the 5th of September.
Remember the 5th of September. Yes. It's been great. Just good to get out there on the ocean, you know, and just stand up.
That's so nice. I guess you're doing the ultimate listening to the ocean.
Well, and I've been listening to myself, and I just feel cooped up. And, you know, for too long, I've let this boner dominate what activities I do. I only wear, you know, basically.
Sorry, what did you say? You let this what dominate?
Boner.
Oh, gotcha.
What did you think I said?
I didn't know. I genuinely didn't know. But this makes a lot of sense. I probably could have put that together in my head.
Well, I just think it's time to let my freak flag fly.
Are you naked on the paddleboard when you're
out
there?
No, I wear board shorts, but they can't contain my manhood.
No. Yeah, I'm just trying to put a mental image together.
Well, it depends how close you are. But it's been said that from the beach, if I'm far enough offshore, it sort of looks like a really thin mast.
Oh, yuck.
But if you get up close, it is unmistakably my 6-foot flesh wand.
Wowee. Does it aid you in balancing on the board, do you think? Or is
Depends
it like
which way the wind's blowing, man.
Oh, true. I mean, it's very thin. I can't imagine it catches the breeze too much.
Very thin. Show me yours.
No, I'm not saying for
Show
a penis. I'm saying for a wind sail.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's more a place to hang a wind sail off.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'll lie down on the very end of the board so that I can tuck it into the water, and it serves as a sort of rudder.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
George, I've got a porno to pitch to you.
It runs deep enough in some water that I come back up with mollusks on my cock.
Well, shit.
But please, no, I'd love to listen.
Imagine, if you will, that we made a pornographic film it didn't focus every minute on the grisly business of bumping uglies, mm-hmm. but instead spent a good amount of time on developing characters through a skillful script, spent some time composing an original soundtrack that met the mood of sensuality, featuring a lot of sort of string orchestra and French accordion.
I'm very intrigued.
We had a leading lady who went through a journey of sexual discovery, sort of a metamorphosis from a sexy caterpillar into a sexy butterfly by the end.
Mm.
In the middle of the film is a sexy chrysalis stage.
Oh, I do love a chrysalis. Sometimes I just imagine what it would feel like to immerse myself in a chrysalis.
Well, this movie is going to show you that journey metaphorically. Instead of the transformation from caterpillar to butterfly, it's from I don't want to say virgin per se. Our central character has had a version of sex, but not the sort of transcendent, soul-defining physical experience that is opened up to her by the end of the film. She is guided through this process by several characters.
Yes.
Her husband, who is an ambassador, helps along the way.
Ooh.
There's an older woman who's very sexually interested in our leading lady.
Yes.
There's a couple of younger women
who feature prominently
as well, including an archaeologist.
This sounds kind of familiar.
I don't know why it would.
Have you watched? Have you seen all my movies?
Yeah, I think I have. Yep.
And have you seen the intellectual property that surrounds the movies I've been in?
That's a different question. Probably not all of it.
Some of it?
Some of it, sure. What are you driving at, George Lazenby?
Nothing in particular. Carry on.
George Robert Lazenby, born 5th of September 1939.
Oh, you know the way to a man's heart, and it's through his long, thin cock.
I really thought you were going to say middle name. Kind of gutted that you didn't. Anywho, what I'm saying is we're going to make The Fly, if you've seen that particular sci-fi movie, but instead of turning into a fly, the woman is going to turn into a sexual butterfly.
When the woman's a sexual butterfly,
yes,
does she want to have sex with people or butterflies?
Both. Next question.
Does she have wings?
Yes, beautiful wings at the end of the movie.
When she has sex with a butterfly, is she too big?
Yes, she is. So it's in that way quite a sad tale of unrequited love because of the physical limitations of being attracted to butterflies when you're not the size of an insect anymore.
Kind of like B-movie.
Kind of like B-movie, yeah. Guy.
You know,
the
B-movie.
Heartbreaking, yeah. Heartbreaking tale of Jerry Seinfeld, the size of about a thumbnail, pursuing the romantic interests of a human-sized woman.
Was it Renee's?
Because she is a human woman.
Was it Renee Zellweger?
I don't know. I've not seen it.
What's she up to these days?
It's a good question, George Lazenby. I know that she sort of shocked the world by looking slightly different than she used to look.
Yeah, I don't
know. About a year ago.
I don't like it when people do that.
Yeah, the whole world was really taken off guard.
Yeah.
It turned out
well, you know, that's our business, not hers.
Yes,
how
indeed.
She looks impacts me more than anyone. I'm George Lazenby.
So. Yes.
I want
quite so.
Everyone to run it by me when they change their, if it's even so much as a new haircut or a trim. Anyway.
George.
I like
the
it.
The fuck butterfly.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck a fly?
It's kind of confusing. I'd like it if we could scale up the size of some of the butterflies and the caterpillars so that people could fuck them or they could fuck people. But otherwise, okay. I think you're onto a winner.
So now I'm thinking we sort of borrow some elements from, I think there was a sequel to Rick Moranis' Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, which was Honey, I Blew Up the Kids, where they all become giants, maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
an enlargement ray is what I'm saying. So if we can kind of get that in the mix to blow up these insects, then you're in?
Yes, if we can get both Rick Moranis and the technology that he used in Honey, I Blew Up Ourselves or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, I think that is what it's called. Here's the thing. I don't know if that man's acting anymore.
Yeah, he stepped back because I think he suffered a personal tragedy.
I believe his the mother of his children might have passed away, and he decided to invest the rest of his sort of, you know, full time into making sure that his boys, I want to say, were doing okay.
One of the good ones, that Rick. He's the guy who actually got me into supping.
What's supping?
Stand up paddleboarding. Sort of a colloquial application of the acronym.
Gotcha.
Tim, I would love to fuck a butterfly on screen. I'm honored you asked.
Right.
I am in the movie, right?
You are certainly in the movie. You're voicing one of the caterpillars.
No, but I'm also in the movie as a person, right?
I mean, I hadn't sort of had you pegged. I just think it's going to be difficult to shoot around the fact that you've got a permanent erection.
Why? It's an erotic film.
It is an erotic film.
Did you not? I mean, I thought you watched the latest Emmanuel today. Didn't that sex scientist Mario say that eroticism is an erection, not an orgasm?
Yes, but he didn't have an erection while he was saying the line.
That we could see.
But I'm saying this is the problem, George. You have sort of a unique physicality to you, which I think is really well suited.
I work really hard on my body.
Well,
I just recently got into stand-up paddleboarding.
Yes, so I gather, based on the fact that you told me
I use my cock as a rudder.
Listen, do you want to voice the fucking caterpillar or not?
Do I get merchandising rights?
Yeah, you can get some points off the back end of the merchandise, yeah.
I own all of the merchandise for my character.
Who the fuck do you think you are?
George fucking Lazenby.
Yeah, right, you get the merch.
And I get points on the back of all the other merch, too.
Yeah, that's fine.
And I get a walk-on role as myself.
You're financing this movie, so I'm going to say yes to that also.
Nice.
But that has got to be the final stipulation. This is our deal. Okay. Handshake?
And if I like fuck a chrysalis or something on set, I can't get in trouble.
You're really jeopardizing your title of the world's greatest listener right now, I feel.
Pardon?
Total merchandising funds for your character's merch. Points on all the other merchandise. A walk-on role as yourself, voicing the caterpillar that fucks a lot.
And
this is it. This is the package.
And I get to have sex with the chrysalis on set, and you don't get to say anything bad about it.
No, I'm not agreeing to that because I think that might be a union issue, and I can't make that decision on their behalf.
Okay. You play hard but fair. I'm in.
Okay, great. Thanks, George. See you later. Man, he's a good negotiator, to his credit.
He really played hardball there.
He really did. The secret to any great negotiation is being a powerful listener, so it does make sense that George Lazenby would be an excellent deal maker.
Out of nowhere. Boner Inspector!
Oh, fuck. Hey, man. Hi. Forgot you existed.
Well, I understand it's my last chance. Last chance saloon.
Boner Inspector, it's so nice to see you.
And
I think
you.
I say that every time you emerge, and I mean it absolutely every time. We are wrapping up this season of the podcast, which I think means we won't get to hang out with you as much.
Oh, that's such a shame.
I know. On behalf of Guy and myself, I just want to thank you so much for joining us as a guest host of this season of the podcast. It's been so cool having you on all the
time. Yeah, we've loved it, man. We've loved your energy every time. Yeah. Such good energy. Yeah. Oh, well, if a man does what a man can.
Yes. So, Boner Inspector, normally you come around here inspecting boners.
Yes, looking for boners.
Yeah. So, I mean, listen, man. We watched a very erotic 70s French
nice
film today.
Titties.
A lot of titties,
man. Ass.
A little bit of ass, yeah.
Cock and pussy?
No, not what I would describe as cock and or pussy, but quite a lot of muff. Like even in the opening 3 minutes of the film.
Nothing wrong with a bit of muff.
Indeed. Yeah, I thought that you might have that opinion. So what I'm here to tell you is that we probably watched the most sexy film of the entire season.
Yes,
today.
Please.
And I don't know if there's something wrong with me, but I did not get an erection while watching this film. I'm so sorry.
Well, I understand.
I got a mind boner for how good the movie
conceptually was. Conceptually, you were aroused.
Yeah.
I'll write that down.
Thank you.
Look, man. Monster erection the whole time. Huge. Pulsing.
Hell yes.
Almost fainted. Oh, my God. Seriously? Yeah, 100%. Monster boner. Monster boner. Okay, I'm going to put some horns on the boner I'm drawing here. Very good.
Nice. Yeah, that's good.
So, well, now you've got a boner on your file. What are you going to do? Retire! Seriously? Yes! A boner inspector only gets to inspect one boner before they must retire.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
The only thing left for me to do is to see it. I don't. Well, we've been talking for a while and the movie's finished. I don't have it. You gotta still have it. I don't have it anymore, man.
Boner inspector? Are you okay?
I just want to walk free.
Oh, man. This doesn't seem like a very good way to end a episode of a show.
I guess I'll be on my way. Thanks.
Fuck.
Thanks for trying, fellas.
See you, boner inspector.
I'll miss you. What's that on the horizon? Standing out there on the ocean. It looks like some sort of mast, a flesh mast.
Oh, yeah. It's George Lazenby. He recently got into
stand-up paddleboarding. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that a boner? Yeah, man. It's a boner.
It is, yeah.
All right, I've got to go.
Yeah, I keep forgetting you guys haven't met. Yeah, go to him.
Go to him.
Oh, that's so nice.
See ya!
We finally got those kids together. Oh, okay. I thought you'd gone. See you, boner inspector. What a wonderful wrap on those two. And Guy, I've got some other news for you.
I'm scared of it.
No, you shouldn't be scared. You should be delighted. Rick Moranis has taken quite a long hiatus in film. Okay. He voiced a character in Brother Bear and Brother Bear 2 called Rut, which was a direct-to-DVD movie. These are not huge endeavors. You know, you can lend your voice to something that's pretty easy.
That's
cool.
Right.
You can kind of do that. That was in 2003, 2006, respectively. Before that, he voiced a character in Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer in The Island of Misfit Toys in 2001. We know that.
Everyone knows that.
Honey, We Shrunk Ourselves was in 97, and as far as I can tell, that was the last movie that he was in on camera. But Guy, I'm delighted to tell you that there is an upcoming project called Shrunk, which is being produced by Walt Disney Pictures, and it is the story of Rick Moranis's character 30 years after the events of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. He has a son who I believe is also a scientist and goes through similar accidental events of shrinking his family.
And
he's coming back to the big screen, baby.
Who should be his collaborator? One of the creators of the original story on which the screenplay is based and starring opposite Rick Moranis, the great Josh Gad.
It felt like an applauded moment.
What's not to love?
I know, the way you said that. I'm excited about that. We all love Rick Moranis, and now we have a new mission. We must boost the sales and performance of Shrunk to an unexpected box office performance to let the mouse know that the people love Rick Moranis and he is a bankable Hollywood star.
He is a bankable Hollywood star.
Yeah.
Well,
a fantastic father and a bankable Hollywood star.
It's all good news in my book, Tim. And I think that is a beautiful and upbeat place to end what has been an arduous season of...
Nothing says ending a year of watching pornography like a discussion of Rick Moranis's cinematic career.
As mentioned, there will be a button to this. We will be watching George Lazenby's Bond.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service from 1969.
Potentially spending some of the time with the great man himself. But thanks to everyone who's joined us on this really winding and ceaselessly, and I would almost say needlessly, horny and occasionally grotesque season of the podcast.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. It has been grueling for us, and it's had a lot of twists and turns. But I'd like to go out on a song, which we're definitely not allowed to play. But I say to the haters, vis-a-vis the law, fuck you guys.
The long and winding road. Disappear. I've seen that road before. It always leads me here. Lead me to your door. The wild and windy
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media, source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.